This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
The Second Amendment's been around for over 200 years. That's not what killed innocent people. Evil killed innocent people.
In the wake of the Orlando nightclub shooting, Governor Rick Scott defends the Second Amendment that some say is invalid.
I think the argument could be made that now that we do have a standing army to protect the state, the whole purpose of the Second Amendment is moot.
Pam Bondi's history with the LGBT community comes back to haunt her thanks to Anderson Cooper.
The elected attorney general of the state of Florida said that my husband and me imposed a significant public harm to the state. Those were her words, not mine. And it was important that someone stepped up and called her out.
And a Trump supporter speaks out.
I'm loud, I'm arrogant, I say what I mean, I say things wrong. Sometimes I just get in trouble, but I'm proud to be an American. I don't want to apologize for being American, and I'm tired of our leaders apologizing for us being Americans.
All that and more coming up on episode 65 of this award-winning podcast. Words, they have tremendous power. I just decided to remind each and every one of you that this is an award-winning program. It's not your average podcast. The Rotunda is about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. In that description alone, I chose words that gives me the flexibility to cover a wide range of issues, even topics on the fringe of politics. So the words I use, you use, we use, whether verbally or in writing, are true influencers. They impact perceptions, and they play a big role into the decisions we make about each other.
Some say those are legal words, but every word matters, whether it's legal or in mass communication, there is an impact to those words.
That's Christian Ulvert, one of the plaintiffs who fought to overturn Florida's gay marriage ban. He has felt the weight of Pam Bondi's words, and later in the program, he's going to offer up a few words for Bondi to consider using in the future. So again, words matter, and I sincerely hope that you're able to apprehend this episode.
Words matter and words change.
Excellent point made by Maura Jane Farley. Farley is an associate professor of American Studies at Brandeis University. You may have noticed I misused the term apprehend.
If I asked you, what does the word apprehend mean, you would probably say to catch, right? We apprehend a criminal. But in the 18th century and the early 19th century, when people used the word apprehend, they used it basically to mean understand. I apprehend the point that you're trying to make. So words are constantly changing in their meaning and becoming more becoming, but anyway, it's just this idea that we use words differently now from what they would have meant in the 18th century.
See? We all sometimes struggle to find the right words to say, especially in times of mourning. Florida Governor Rick Scott and many other elected officials made their way to Orlando following the deadly shooting that killed 49 people at Pulse, a popular gay nightclub. Donald Trump, the presumptive GOP nominee, stayed true to form with an impulsive and irrational response by reigniting his call for a ban on Muslim entering the country. He also said the bloodshed in the nightclub would have been prevented if people were carrying their own guns. And now he's calling to do more of what's already being done illegally in this country, which is to discriminate by targeting individuals for suspicion of crimes based on the individual's race, ethnicity, religion, or national origin. Here's Trump talking to CBS News.
I think profiling is something that we're going to have to start thinking about as a country, and other countries do it. And you look at Israel and you look at others and they do it, and they do it successfully. And, you know, I hate the concept of profiling, but we have to start using common sense, and we have to use our heads. I see people that, and I've seen it recently. We had a case where, you know, very much, you know, in my case, where we had... We had tremendous numbers of people coming into a speech I was making, and, you know, people that obviously had no guns, had no weapons, had no anything, and they were going through screening, and they were going through the same scrutiny, the absolute same scrutiny, as somebody else that looked like it could have been a possible person. So we really have to look at profiling. We have to look at it seriously. And other countries do it, and it's not the worst thing to do. I hate the concept of profiling, but we have to use common sense. We're not using common sense.
That is the last thing the crowds at a Trump rally need to hear. They've already been profiling, and for anyone who doesn't look like the typical Trump supporter, gets kicked out. Profiling. Trump is now willing to profile the people he has called his friends, their families. The impact of Trump's words continues to empower others, including Governor Rick Scott, who tells CNN he's tired with what's going on in our country.
We have 40 people slaughtered right here. When are we going to say to ourselves as a country, enough's enough? Let's focus on destroying ISIS. When we find information about somebody coming into our country, if we're not covered with you coming into our country, this is our country. Mm-hmm. Why are you coming here? And then if we do vet somebody and we allow them in, why won't we share that with our local law enforcement? So we can, if we feel like we need to, because we're responsible for public safety in our states. We're fortunately at a 45-year low in our crime rate, but I don't want anything like this to happen in my state ever again to any citizen.
A quick search of some of the most recent polls. I found one in 2013 showing Florida voters support stricter gun laws. 91% in a Quinnipiac poll showed voters supported universal background checks. A recent poll by Public Policy Polling shows 93% of voters support requiring a criminal background check before buying a firearm. But so far, the Republican-controlled legislature has only been interested in relaxing gun restrictions. Here's Governor Rick Scott with CNN's Pamela Brown.
My law enforcement sources, though, tell me that while ISIS may have played a role, there were other factors at play that he more recently became radicalized. So, again, my question to you is, yes, ISIS terrorism could be to blame, but can you accept any responsibility for the, you know, gun laws here in Florida? The fact that it is easier to walk out of a gun store in half an hour with an AR-15 that can kill more people faster than a pistol, yet it's harder to get a pistol than an AR-15.
Let's remember, the Second Amendment's been around for over 200 years. That's not what killed innocent people. Evil killed innocent people. There's going to be a time to have a conversation about what we do to make our state or city or our country safer again.
All right, with our focus on words, I came across another perspective on the Second Amendment that takes into account what Scott just mentioned, that the Second Amendment has been around for more than 200 years. Here's American Studies Professor Maura Jane Farrelly of Brandeis University.
Well, I think it's incredibly frustrating to me to hear this narrative of what the purpose of the Second Amendment is, to hear this narrative that has really been spun by the NRA since the 1970s and 1980s. And the reason it's troubling to me, it doesn't even necessarily have to do with the horrible consequences of the narrative. It simply is troubling to me because it is so historically inaccurate. The narrative is that the founders wrote and passed the Second Amendment so that people would always have access to guns so that they could defend themselves against the state, against the government. This is the narrative that the NRA has spun. And in fact, it's precisely the opposite. And all you have to do to see that is read the amendment with a proper understanding of what the language in the amendment would have meant in the 18th century, as opposed to what that language says now.
All right, so join in on this assignment. Pause and look up the Second Amendment and follow along.
As an example of how the language is not understood today as it would have been understood in the 18th century, this term well-regulated. Right, you'll often hear people debate what that term means. And nowadays, when we talk about something being regulated, we mean that it is being monitored, it is being controlled, it is being restricted in some way. And that's not what the word would have meant in the 18th century. A well-regulated militia was a well-supplied militia. And so one of the things I like to point out to people is that the British Army was referred to as the regulators because they were a supplied army. In that case, they had been supplied with their arms by the British government. So that's the first thing we need to understand is the meaning of the term well-regulated. Another important word is the word militia. A militia was not a standing army of career soldiers. A militia was a group of volunteer soldiers. So a well-regulated militia would have been a well-supplied group of volunteer soldiers. And a free state would have been a state that did not have a standing army of career soldiers to rely upon to protect it. And these are all very important things for us to understand in order to understand what was the purpose of the Second Amendment then.
So consider all of that. One of the arguments that can be made is that the Second Amendment is no longer relevant because we have a standing army.
Right. So if you look at the first 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment is the only amendment that actually explains itself. For all of the other amendments, it is sort of self-evident. You know, like, we don't need to explain why it is that people should be able to assemble freely and express themselves freely. We sort of consider that to be self-evident. But in the case of the Second Amendment, there is an actual explanation for why it is there. That explanation is that a country that does not have a standing army to protect itself is going to need to be able to rely upon volunteer soldiers who will arrive with their own arms in order to defend it. So if that's the reason for the Second Amendment, the fact that we don't have a standing army and so we have to rely upon career soldiers, I think the argument could be made that now that we do have a standing army to protect the state, the whole purpose of the Second Amendment is moot.
So this begs the question, did Congress violate the Second Amendment?
The fact that we do now have a career army, and it was a series of decisions that Congress started making in the 1790s. It's really not until after the War of 1812 that we finally have a permanent army created by Congress. You could conceivably make the argument that when Congress finally created our permanent army in the early 19th century, that that's technically violating the spirit of the Second Amendment.
So what feedback have you been getting when you try to convey this information about the Second Amendment?
In terms of conversations that I have with friends, most of the feedback I end up getting is that, you know, people still just keep lapsing back into our 20th and 21st century understanding of the terms in the amendment. This notion that, no, we need to be using the terms in the way that they would have been meant in the 18th century, I think just kind of gets lost on people.
And there you have it. Special thanks to Maura Jane Farrelly, Associate Professor of American Studies at Brandeis University, for taking a break from her vacation to chat here on The Rotunda. And special thanks to Facebook friends Julia and Michael for sharing this knowledge. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Coming up, a war of words between Attorney General Pam Bondi and CNN's Anderson Cooper.
Using language accusing gay people of trying to do harm to the people of Florida, doesn't that send a message to some people who might have bad ideas
Anderson,
in mind?
Anderson, I don't believe gay people could do harm to the state of Florida. We're
but you argued
beings.
That in court.
My lawyer argued a case.
One of the plaintiffs that fought against Bondi to overturn Florida's gay marriage ban shares a few words for Bondi.
She could have just said, you know, Anderson, the times are changing, and at that time I had to do what I had to do as the elected attorney general. Was I happy with doing it? No, but I'm elected to do a job. And today I recognize that times have changed, and we're living in a very tragic moment in our state's history.
And after getting stuck in the Tampa International Airport, people were so ready to talk about current events, I almost missed my flight.
I'm proud to be an American. I don't want to apologize for being American, and I'm tired of our leaders apologizing for us being Americans.
I like that.
Oh, there we go. That's me. I gotta go.
This is Tramell Gomes inviting you to visit RotundaPodcast.com for the latest news and information. This program comes to you in part thanks to our sponsors and listeners like you. I invite you to pledge your support via a one-time or monthly contribution by visiting the top right-hand corner of RotundaPodcast.com. Just click on Donate. Remember to follow on social media, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Rotunda Podcast. And again, thanks for your support. Welcome back to The Rotunda. So Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi says she felt ambushed after agreeing to do an interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper. The interview itself came as a surprise away from her traditional Fox News programs that she frequents.
So we've been dealing with price gouging issues, with potential scams about people trying to donate to legitimate charities. So that's what they told us they wanted us to talk about. And we felt like Anderson Cooper had a huge audience to help people yesterday. So we went over there, we went on, we were going to talk about, the interview was supposed to be about helping victims' families, not creating more anger and havoc and hatred yesterday. Yesterday was about unity.
Anyway, her interview with Cooper didn't go so well at all.
That's what I was defending. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do. I've never said I don't like gay people. That's
but
ridiculous.
You do say, but do you worry about using language accusing gay people of trying to do harm to the people of Florida when doesn't that send a message to some people who might have bad ideas
Anderson,
in mind?
Anderson, I don't believe gay people could do harm to the state of Florida.
But you argued that in court.
My lawyer argued a case defending what the Supreme Court allowed the voters to put in our state constitution.
But you are arguing that gay marriage, if there was gay marriage, if there was same-sex marriage, that would do harm to the people of Florida, to Florida society.
That it was constitutional to put that in the constitution.
Are you saying you did not believe it would do harm to Florida?
Of course not. Of course not. Gay people, no, I've never said that. Those words have never come out.
After the interview, Bondi went on talk radio, the Len Berman and Todd Smith in the Morning show, and complained about her time with Cooper.
Anderson Cooper is the champion for the LGBT community, and he could have been helping people yesterday. So I was disappointed in that. I was extremely disappointed in that. And it just wasn't the time nor the place for that yesterday, because all it did was encourage anger and hate and families who were trying to help to probably not trust my office and the 14 advocates we've brought in who are helping, trying to help them get compensation to bury their loved ones. And of course, I've been getting, you know, horrible hatred emails and texts now based on Anderson's story. So that was just sad.
Well, that caused Cooper to fire off a response.
My interview was not filled with any anger. I was respectful before the interview. I was respectful during the interview. And I was respectful after the interview. I don't know Pam Bondi personally. She seems like a nice person, actually. I don't think she has hate in her heart. But what I think doesn't matter. It's my job to hold people accountable. And if on Sunday a politician is talking about love and embracing, quote, our LGBT community, I don't think it's unfair to look at their record and see if they have actually ever spoken that way publicly before, which I've never heard her say. The fact is, Attorney General Bondi signed off on a 2014 federal court brief that claimed married gay people would, quote, impose significant public harm. Harm.
It also drove Christian Ulvert, one of the plaintiffs who fought to overturn Florida's gay marriage ban, to write Bondi a letter.
I can only imagine that your heart is guided by love, but your acts and words show a different voice. Don't fight CNN or Anderson Cooper. Instead, use your leadership to draw attention to the fact that surviving LGBT Floridians who are fighting for their lives from this senseless tragedy and whose names are being shared publicly could be legally fired because of who they are. My hope is that happens to no one, but the law unfortunately offers no protections. Join our cause to make Florida a more fair and just state by putting actions to the words you said yesterday on CNN.
How do you think Bondi should have responded to Cooper's questioning?
You know, she could have just said, you know, Anderson, the times are changing, and at that time I had to do what I had to do as the elected attorney general. Was I happy with doing it? No, but I'm elected to do a job. And today I recognize that times have changed and we're living in a very tragic moment in our state's history, and things need to change also with our policies to make sure that discrimination no longer lives in our state. She could have chosen to do that because things are different today, but she again chose to deflect, pass blame to a lawyer when she's the elected attorney general.
Here is the rest of the interview with Christian Ulvert.
I was born and raised in Miami, and obviously the fact that we have to travel outside our home state, I've only lived in Florida. That's the only world I know as a home state. And we had to travel out to get married and then to come back home and realize that we didn't have some of the same rights as other married couples in our state because we were discriminated against as gay Floridians. So the only option and recourse we had was to file a lawsuit to ensure that the state of Florida recognized our marriage. And what we found ourselves doing is fighting the state every step of the way. And that's what prompted me to do the letter yesterday, because I had the same sense of frustration and just deep disappointment in my state, the state I love, that was fighting recognition of my marriage back in 2014, doing so, reliving that moment, obviously in a very tragic backdrop in Orlando, Florida, seeing the Attorney General. Obviously, I commended her for lending her voice to be there and ensure that the victims and those wounded had the full services of our state. But she once again, and instead of standing up and saying, there's a wrong in our state's history that needs to be righted, and acknowledge that, she again went back to the same thing, that she had to defend the Constitution. She didn't. And that was the point of my letter. In years past, former Governor Lon Chiles said that the state was wrong and the state constitution was not right and that he couldn't defend it. And our Attorney General had the same opportunity to do so again, and she chose not to.
Thanks to Christian Ulvert, former Democratic Party political director and now communications consultant. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Finally, this week, I was traveling around South Florida and found myself stuck at Tampa International Airport, with a 3-hour delay in the way of me getting back to Tallahassee. But I ended up getting so caught up in a conversation with a fellow traveler delayed on his way to Fort Lauderdale, I almost missed my flight.
Do you have a card? Right here.
Anyway, Michael Krosky was fascinating to talk to. I wish our initial conversation was recorded. He wanted to make his point about reforming the political system in Washington.
I'm Michael Krosky. I work for an international company. We sell vehicles and equipment to third world and developing countries.
So we had a long, lengthy discussion about politics, and I'm only now starting the recorder. But let's see where to start before we get into your main point that you want to get over to change the political system in the country. We started off talking about the situation in Orlando. What do you make of what happened there, since it's so fresh, it's so new, and the families are still reeling with what's going on?
I think there was a breakdown in the FBI's using the information they had, not relaying this stuff to the local police, not working with the other law enforcement agencies, trying to say, hey, we've got nothing on this guy, but this guy we've been watching. So you go from 2 FBI agents to 50 local police that kind of have the guy on their radar. They could have seen something, could have watched what he did. You know, yeah. Maybe it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. I know you mentioned like the politics of it all and the quickness to blame guns, instead of focusing on the breakdown. What do you mean with that? Why shouldn't we look at guns as an issue in this situation?
Because regardless of what people think, if a bad guy wants to do something, he can get the guns. I used France as an example. France, you know, they don't have access to guns. They can't get guns. But yet, at this Charlie Hebdo thing, you get 8 or 9 terrorists coming there, fully stocked with weapons, automatic weapons, pistols, body armor. They come in there and just wreak havoc, kill all the people. But yet, you know, in France, you can't buy a gun. So obviously, the laws to not have guns really are just a joke. I mean, if a guy wants to do bad things, he can get a weapon. Yeah.
Your argument is one that I hear a lot, to preserve not even exploring issues of gun control or gun reforms. Is there a way to compromise? Do you see any way of adjusting our current gun laws, especially here in Florida, where this issue happened, where this young man had access to guns and so freely?
Well, considering he worked from what I understand, he worked for a contractor for the Department of Homeland Security. From what I understand, when you work for the government, you're vetted deeply, painfully. But yet, you know, this guy's working there and, you know, can do all this, kill all these people. There's a vetting process when you're working for the U.S. government that should be far and above the guy that's, you know, has a shotgun in his house to kill critters.
Who are you voting for this election?
I'm not voting for Hillary.
Why not? Why not?
Been in this game for 30 years, and to her it's a game. She's been in this game for 30 years. She says things that she knows are blatant lies. She, this slush fund, this Clinton Foundation slush fund, where she's supposed to be the protector of the women and protector of the gays and lesbians and all this stuff, but yet she takes millions of dollars from countries that, you know, throw gays out of windows, and, you know, women have no rights. They can't drive. They can't get a job. They've got to have full witnesses if they claim rape. They've got to, you know, she takes money from them and puts it in this big slush fund, but yet in the country, she's the champion of women. And, oh, isn't it time for a woman president? Why is it time for a woman president? I don't get that. That seems to be her only platform. Isn't it time for a woman president? Well, she's a woman. She's supposed to be supporting women, but yet in the background, she's taking millions of dollars from people that women have no rights. And same with the gays and lesbians. You know, they have no rights in the country she's taking money from, so I just don't trust her as far as I can throw her.
So why would you give your trust to someone who really doesn't even know what he's saying that's coming out of his mouth? He has to apologize. He doesn't really like to apologize, but he comes back with something different. He says something wrong, and he doesn't even care if he says something wrong. Why would you put your trust in someone who you see doesn't even have the skill set to handle what's coming out of his mouth to run this very powerful, important country?
Well, people are underestimating Donald Trump. I mean, he's not a dummy. People like to say that. People like to believe that. He's a businessman. I think he loves America. He has America's best interests at heart. And give the guy a chance, because we've given these politicians chances forever. And, you know, the last 8 years we've been apologizing for being Americans. And believe me, I don't like to apologize for being American. Mm-hmm. I'm loud. I'm arrogant. I say what I mean. I say things wrong. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just get in trouble. But I'm proud to be an American. I don't want to apologize for being American, and I'm tired of our leaders apologizing for us being Americans.
I like that. Oh, there we go. That's me. I gotta go.
Right. Well, it was good talking to you. Mention the term limits.
The term limits. Oh yeah. I'll mention that.
I'll mention that.
Yes. Yes. Do you have a card? Right here.
And off I went to catch my flight back to Tallahassee. Extra leg room? Sure.
Okay, baby. Okay, and in the unlikely event of an emergency, which I don't plan on having, are you ready when able to help me?
Yes.
Awesome, yeah. Sauce. Thank you. You're welcome, baby. I'll just need your bag to go under the seat.
So Michael Kroski wanted to make sure that I share that he wants to see term limits in Congress. He thinks lawmakers on the federal level should only serve 2 terms. Any new Senate and representative running for office will start with term limits, and the ones currently in office will get 2 terms after their upcoming re-election, to give them time to cycle out. Kroski says this is one way to weed out the career politicians getting rich off of the system. So that's one idea, and I made it in.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, the flight attendant will be closing the main cabin door.
Michael Kroski, thanks for chatting with me. That's it for this edition of the Rotunda. Special thanks to Maura Jane Farrelly at Brandeis University, communications consultant Christian Ulvert, and my Tampa airport buddy Michael Kroski of Fort Lauderdale. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com and join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.